to us Haitian people. And this is what we're saying. Listen to our voices. That's what democracy is about. It's not taking something from the State Department, from a very arrogant spokesperson at the State Department who is saying, we're listening to the Haitian people. This is funny. The American embassy has not even called a commission. Not once have they called us to say, we would like to hear what you're saying. Yep. No, this is unacceptable.
Monique Lesko, we want to thank you for being with us. Of course, we're going to continue to follow this and also who murdered the Haitian president. Monique Lesko is a Haitian pro-democracy advocate who's just come up to Washington, usually in Port-au-Prince. She's a member of the Commission for a Haitian Solution to the Crisis. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for our video production fellowship and our digital fellowship here at our New York City studio. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tommy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, and Adriana Contreras. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Want an impactful way to volunteer for KBOO? Believe in KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change? Then apply to be a member of the KBOO Board of Directors. Our KBOO Board guides our strategic work and represents the interests and visions of all our members. There is a time commitment of about 15 hours a month for all board members, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kbu.fm and fill out an application. If you need a paper copy mailed to you, call the station or email applicationboard@kbu.org. That's one word, applicationboard@kbu.org. The deadline to apply is July 25th, 2021.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8 a.m. on Wednesday. It's time for the Wednesday Talk Radio program with your host, Paul Rowland. Stay tuned.
We've made an enemy of the sun and sold our weapons to everyone. Now we want to buy. Thank you. let it go the way it's supposed to go. Without laser beams and invisible shields and satellites in the sky, satellites in the sky.
And good morning, everybody. This is Paul Rowan. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm here by myself here in production room one in the KBOO studios. Not sure how long we'll be here. The way the things are going with this very, very pesky, deadly virus that is rampaging again. Of course, way less here in Portland because, you know, we are sensible folks, most of us, and have gotten vaccinated willingly or somewhat less, but realizing that a pandemic is nothing to mess around with. Anyway, I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be here with Sonia, operating the board, to take your calls eventually at 503-231-8187. We started that out with the plaintive voice of Exene Chervenka from her, I think it was her first post-X solo album, I believe, called Old Wives Tales from June of 1989. That was definitely on the soundtrack of the kind of the heady days there of the Earth First movement and what, you know, sort of became known as Little Beirut here in Portland. Old Portland, as it were, and that was definitely on the soundtrack, that entire album. But for me, especially that song, of course, that was written in as a critique of the Strategic Defense Initiative, otherwise known as Star Wars, that Reagan had proposed and thankfully died on the vine. But no doubt elements of it have been developed and probably inspired some other countries. Of course, Israel's got Iron Dome. Thank you, Sonia. You are on it. The Iron Dome system. Anyway, and of course, you know, now we got Trump's Space Corps. I actually didn't do any research to see how that's developed. The, you know, funding has gone through, if it's organizationally developed or whatever, but you know what I mean. Other countries are certainly deploying more and more satellites. So yeah, I mean, how to fight against the militaries of the world. But anyway, that was Exene Chervenka, but I thought, of course, that it would, and it does. It really holds up admirably well today. To kick off my chosen topic of the day, the sixth spectacle of watching, the sixth spectacle of watching Anderson Cooper at CNN and just about everyone else swooning over Jeff Bezos. I'm sure he did it for Branson as well, and his space flight. And then of course, Bezos promising $100 million to CNN pundit Van Jones. Isn't that interesting? Does that strike you as somehow a little iffy? Anyway, kind of sick, actually. So yeah, billionaires in space while the Earth burns. That's what we're talking about. We're going to be talking about, you know, the patriarchy. I mean, is that the apex of the patriarchal industrial civilization or what? Three white guys up there, three white billionaires up there in space. While literally, I mean, this is that the jet stream has broken, perhaps permanently, into these separate raging pieces that are doing disaster at the same time all across the planet. The German floods were just, I mean, Merkel called them surreal. I don't know what you'd call them. China is just undergoing possibly even more massive, absolutely mind-boggling flooding. We've got the Bootleg fire that's, what, 400-some-thousand acres and just exploding and exploding. We've got the West locked in a terrible drought. We've got reservoirs drying up all over the place, including now here in Oregon. What are we going to do if cities start to really, truly lose the ability to provide the kind of water that we're used to in this extravagant civilization that we live in? You know, already cities in Southern California, in Nevada, are having to write new regulations, you know, probably even including Republicans on their city councils and whatever, to, you know, mandate no more watering of backyards, for example, or unused grassy areas. I mean, that's just the first. I mean, you know, just think of all the things that will have to be scaled back and the huge uproar that will be created. And then think of, being in a position like Flint. If pipes, you know, water gets cut off to pipes, they go unused, they'll be, I don't know. You could think of all kinds of scenarios. I was thinking it's not directly like Flint because they had specific problem with toxins in their water, lead and others in their water. I'm talking about like no water. Anyway, lots to talk about. I'm going to go to a couple articles. This is from Decoding. That's one I've never seen. Decoding. Private space billionaires are having blast while planet and people are bearing cost. The race to space is on. Three billionaires are battling to exit the periphery of the Earth, looking to dominate the lesser-known world with billions in their pockets, while some are rejoicing. Richard Branson, Jeff Bezos, and Elon Musk's extravagant stunts outside of the Earth. Everybody is missing the point that billionaires' obsession with space is the beginning of a new era, the boom of human outreach in the space and orbital economy on Earth. It all sounds straight out of science fiction, a handful of ultra-rich businessmen building their own spacecraft, setting off to space just for recreation and making legacy back on Earth. The world has come so far as to no longer rely on the governments to carry out space missions with vague, almost suspicious objectives. But science fiction never really shows the real cost that the world and nature suffer while building an ultra-tech world where everything is possible. Now that humans are bringing that extraterrestrial vision to shape, there are a lot of consequences following the path. When billion and million dollar companies evade taxes on Earth, the G7 committees launch global tax deals. Lawsuits are filed by authorities and citizens run anti-tech campaigns on social media, preaching equitable distribution of wealth. Ironically, when the billionaire founders of these billion dollar companies build their spacecraft to go on space excursions, critics miss out on extremely crucial points to bring under scrutiny. This is the eruption of a new era in multiple ways, the first being a never-seen-before expansion of the space economy. Richard Branson went on a space excursion in his company Virgin Galactic's crewed spaceflight. Jeff Bezos, they say is soon, but we know he just flew, also on Blue Origin's new Shepard rocker. Elon Musk is endeavoring to settle human colonies on Mars. And if anything, this personalized branding by the founders of the 21st century space companies is the biggest marketing tool of the space economy. The space is now open to the private market where people with paramount wealth and necessary resources can fly outside the Earth purposelessly. Back at Earth, their companies are privatized, and investors who can never physically be part of space excursions and are happy being part of the process by investing in these companies. There are more than dozens of such space companies that are growing larger with privatizations. These companies are commercializing the orbits of the Earth at an unimaginably high speed. And while it all looks harmless, well, I guess to the ignorant observer, there is much that we are missing. Back on Earth, the planet is falling apart. People with massive wealth are using it for 10-minute million-dollar flights to space. Alternatively, this money could be used to speed up the zero-carbon mission, amplify renewable geoengineering, and maximize innovation to increase green cover. However, very little of that sort is happening. Side note, Bezos also gave $100 million to the chef, I think Jose somebody or rather, must be an extremely famous person. The fact that I didn't know about him doesn't mean much, but anyway, I gave away $200 million, I guess, to show that he really is doing something as wealth. But, I mean, Van Jo's and a social justice inclined chef, I doubt they're really going to. Yeah, we need community solutions. Well, I'm going to talk about that soon, talk about the microgrid versus big centralized tech. There's I heard a Fresh Air interview with, I think his name's, Ivan Penn, New York Times writer based in Los Angeles. Very, very excellent show. I'm going to be getting into that because while it is doom and gloom, there's no mincing words around that. We still just can't give up. And, there are still the same challenges that have been facing us since we first knew about climate change, over a century ago. But certainly since the 70s, there's been more and more and more scientific validation of this by now established scientific truth of human-induced climate change due to so-called greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, carbon dioxide, methane, and others. And we certainly haven't done a lot about it, and time is so short. So I'm going to not just talk about the grave danger we are in the midst of, but we got to keep doing things. We can't just lie down in the face of the billionaire class's obsessions. So back on Earth, the Earth is falling apart. People with massive wealth are using it for a 10-minute million-dollar space flights to space. We know where this money could be going. However, very little of that is happening. Instead, the most famous billionaires are endlessly increasing their carbon footprints while even leaving some in space now. All along the way, they're serving as example for the entrepreneurial generation to follow their lead. Okay, so there's a lot to this. This is a lengthy article. More than $10 billion have been invested into the space sector between 2005 and 2015. The liberalized privatization of space industry technically began in the 1980s, and the regulations back to Reagan, and the regulations were only introduced in 1990 to the 2000s. Before these years, governments of the nations reserved the extraterrestrial ventures solely for research purposes, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm reading again from Decoding, D-K-O-D-I-N-G, private space billionaires are having blast while planet and people are bearing the cost. Now, there are a bunch of articles coming out about the environmental impact. There's one all the way back over 10 years ago from 2010, Space Tourism to Accelerate Climate Change. Findings reported in a paper in Geophysical Research Letters suggest that emissions from 1,000 private rocket launches a year would persist high in the stratosphere, potentially altering global atmospheric circulation and distributions of ozone. The simulations show that the changes to Earth's climate could increase polar surface temperatures by 1 degree centigrade. That's on top of what we're already. We're already just past 1 degree centigrade increase since, the Industrial Revolution began, and we see the massive impacts that's already having. And we're talking about, and we're We're going past two already. We know that. So we're already in totally unforeseen territory at 2 degrees. If what we're seeing now at 1 degrees is happening, if you add another 1 degree, and it would reduce polar sea ice by 5 to 15%. Quote, there are fundamental limits to how much material human beings can put into orbit without having a significant impact, said Martin Ross, an atmospheric scientist at the Aerospace Corporation in Los Angeles, California, and an author of the study. Private spaceflight is a rapidly maturing industry, and this is from 2010. Spaceport America, a launch site in Las Cruces, New Mexico, opened its first runway in that same year of 2010 in October. Then during the next 3 years, companies such as Virgin Galactic, headquartered at Spaceport America, expect to make up to 2 launches per day for space tourists. Of course, it's taken them this long just to gear up to the initial exploratory flights, but they've done them, and they're just going to keep going unless, you know, the age-old question that I remember back from my, you know, really coming of age as a conscious political person and activist, the idea of imposing societal limits on production and on certain technologies and on certain substances and products, and our dramatic inability, you know, again, largely due to the counter reaction of the 60s from Reagan on, and the, you know, the rise of neoliberalism and the defeat of the communist bloc, so that unfettered capitalism has no major competitors. Of course, some people like the Chinese would beg to disagree. Of course, they just went on their own centralized capitalist system with really even more ability to do have devastating impacts because of the tight control, societal economic control exerted by the Central Committee, etc. So yes, dire situation. Space tourism will accelerate climate change. It's got to go. We still don't have, you know, the kind of, you know, we still haven't broken down the vast alienating institutions that are controlling our destiny so that we can actually institute community-based solutions along the lines of, I mean, I know I promise this all the time. Okay, today my back is getting better, so I can sit at the computer now. Honestly, this is a valid excuse, folks. So I will sit down and link to all these articles that I'm reading from, which I have saved. So yeah, there's a lot of articles about the negative impacts of all kinds. Specifically, we're talking about climate change, but you know, the production of the fuel, the toxic production of the fuel, all the minerals and chemicals that they're using. It's just it's endless. There's all, you know, these huge enterprises have a whole pyramid of production process that support them. Okay, so I was talking about the Fresh Air, which is on our competitor public radio station, NPR. Actually, it's Dave Davies, who I think I actually kind of like a bit more than Terry Gross. But anyway, quibbles. So U.S. faces crossroads on renewable energy future. I'll just read the introduction because I think it summarizes it. President Biden says he wants to promote, this is an article from WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio, just sort of a, you know, providing the text from Fresh Air. President Biden says he wants to promote renewable energy and hopes to completely eliminate greenhouse gases from the production of electric power in the United States by 2035. One element of that plan is spending $73 billion on thousands of miles of new power lines. Part of an infrastructure spending plan Biden reached with a bipartisan group of senators. Of course, they're debating that right now. Our guest, New York Times reporter Ivan Penn, says a sharp debate has emerged over how to spend that money on electrical power generation and transmission. While the Biden plan sees a massive national grid of power lines fueled by wind turbines and solar farms, others want a more local approach, with solar panels and batteries in homes and businesses. Ivan Penn says the nation faces a once-in-a-generation choice over how to deliver energy to our homes, businesses, and electric cars. The outcome, he writes, could shape the course of climate change and determine how the United States copes with wildfires, heat waves, and other extreme weather linked to global warming. Penn explores the issue in an article in Monday's newspaper. That was, I think, maybe two Mondays ago. Anyway, Ivan Penn is a Los Angeles-based reporter covering alternative energy. Before going to the Times in 2018, he covered utility and energy issues for nearly 8 years at the Tampa Bay Times and then the Los Angeles Times. So that's Ivan Penn. Worth checking out. I've got both the article up here that... which actually I think I can't get because it's one of those you have to subscribe and log in. So anyway, but it's most of it is on this Fresh Air. So okay, so I'm talking about, what am I talking about? I'm talking about the obscenity of these billionaires, these white male billionaires in space while the world burns. This the obscene class differential, the spectacle of it all, to, and while we should be focusing on the urgent emergencies here on poor old beleaguered planet Earth, no, they still think that they can have it all. They can destroy their cake and have it too. I don't know. They can eat their billion-dollar cake and have it too. They can, pretend that they're, real human beings and give to their philanthropies and whatever, and that and give these, I don't know what it is, $10 million a ticket or $1 million, whatever, to just go up in space. I don't know. Why don't they go to an amusement park or something? Those are, those rides are pretty good. Space Mountain, says Sonia. Right on. I used to love those things. I was a roller coaster fanatic. Anyway, all right. So I'm saying this can't be happening, folks. And it just reveals once again our absolute powerlessness to affect large-scale decisions. We seem to be, who are we? What do you mean we, white man? That's an old Indian joke. Anyway, we progressives, does that mean anything? Seem to have a little more influence because of the rise of a seriously progressive wing of the Democratic Party, which seems to be, of course, we all know the stalemates and the ugliness that's happening at a federal level. Those realities are there. They're not going away anytime soon. But, in places like Portland, we've passed progressive climate legislation that, actually serves as a model for others and possibly even federally. Maybe even they looked at it for the Green New Deal anyway. Some municipalities and states can go in the right direction. But, what we need is both federal and international cooperation to completely regear what's happening, to completely regear the economy, eliminate whole classes of products, whole classes of toxic substances, be able to make the kind of Montreal Protocol agreements on all sorts of other things, on I could spin out a tale of what I think, but you could probably imagine it yourself. But, if that doesn't happen, we're toast, folks, we're toast. And it's not happening, and it's not happening also because we have the sick spectacle of billionaire capitalism being able to do whatever the heck they want with no consequences, with no checks and balances. Okay, so that's the one side. The other side is, how would we, if we got control, the right thinking people who actually see what's happening and have an inkling of how you could actually, in fairly short order, regear the economy, the electrical system, the production system, what would be the priorities? Well, one of the big priorities is the electric grid. I mean, that's what they're talking about now. This the Green New Deal, the infrastructure plan, that's what the progressive wing and, to the extent that he understands these things and his advisors do, Biden is trying to, incrementally move in that direction. Of course, it needs to happen in a revolutionary, rapid way, but, you know, whatever. So yeah, they're talking about microgrids versus the big grid. And what that means is, you know, basically, okay, so you have to basically just, I think everywhere you have to feed your electrical energy back into the grid in order to have like a solar rooftop array on your, just on your private house or elsewhere, which, you know, creates problems. If the whole grid goes down, that's a problem. You know, the whole battery storage thing, you know, is a big problem because, you know, there hasn't been that long-lasting storage in the batteries that would be able to, you know, you'd be able to power your whatever part of your house, your business, whatever, off the batteries or array of batteries. You know, there's been a lot of technological development, so there is a longer storage time now. There's lots of, you know, other technologies in the pipeline. There's a lot of problems with the minerals like lithium that they use for those things. There's a lot of fights now, like in northern Nevada on the Oregon border at Thacker Pass, against huge lithium mines, which, you know, destroy the groundwater, impact endangered species, affect the cultural resources and values of the native peoples who were there for thousands or tens of thousands of years, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, there's all sorts of contradictions. Can these be addressed in a rational way? Well, no, not if we're still wasting precious resources on these obscene, useless space flights and, you know, you name it, of all the useless products that are being put out, of all the excess packaging and of plastics and doodads and knickknacks, you know, that are, a lot of which are coming from China and across the seas uselessly in these huge container ships, et cetera, et cetera. It's, you know, we all know what's going on. But, so, the grid, we could detach from the grid. You know, we could have, the microgrid is basically, you know, a few houses, like things like some corporate campuses, academic campuses, other institutions, have their own grid, you know, their own power source. Those are the only kinds of places really have it. It's to do it in a city, to do it like with your neighbors is well nigh impossible. Solar rooftop arrays are very difficult. The laws, and there's actually in this Fresh Air interview, Ivan Penn said that there was actually, I think it was in maybe Pennsylvania, a very unlikely alliance between Tea Party, local Chamber of Commerce, Sierra Club, and others. I think it's federal legislation to make it easier to put in solar rooftop arrays, energy producing. You know, passive solar is another thing that doesn't get talked about enough, but that's another subject. So we need to just change the things that are inhibiting policy changes to make it easier to go to microgrid. There's some very promising micro wind power that use a whole different, they don't have those big blades. They have kind of like a nautilus shaped or a kind of a spiral shape that revolves horizontally that I've heard that are very, very promising, that could go perhaps even on private houses that make a lot less noise. It maybe you could have on businesses. You know, you could have possibly even in certain locations of the city, the classic rotating blades. There's micro hydro that could go in city water, you know, from Bull Run. You know, we could possibly have other smaller micro hydro as the water, you know, it's a long downhill that comes from way east in the mountains there. You know, all sorts of other, even in sewers, you could have micro hydro. You could have, as I said, passive solar. You know, we need to, all that research and development funding that's going into the space industry and other industries, including the fossil fuel industry, needs to go rapidly into, not less environmentally damaging solutions to these problems. It has to happen. We're up against it. So, okay, that's what I threw out for now. We're already at 8:34 in the morning. this is a, I guess people are listening because they're not calling in, or they just fled from the subject I brought up. But I'd like to hear from you. 503-231-8187. I can continue reading. There's, you know, lots of other interesting articles. One really kind of interesting one on Salon is "No Billionaires Won't Escape to Space While the World Burns." Just sort of, you know, the whole idea that they're really out to save themselves. They know that the Earth is, you know, it, as I said, is burning up from climate change, from global warming, and they're creating the basis for them to be able to save themselves personally. And this article in Salon kind of debunks the idea. I'll just read a paragraph here. "What caught me by surprise was the number of folks who seem to believe that Musk, Bezos, and Branson are trying to escape the ravages of climate change for a life in space, and might even succeed in doing so. The notion that the rich will live comfortably high above the Earth while the planet becomes an uninhabitable wasteland has been popularized by movies like Elysium and Wall-E. The New York Times fueled this fantasy back in 2018 with a story about Axiom's proposed luxury space hotel under the headline, 'The Rich Are Planning to Leave This Wretched Planet.' But as a sci-fi writer and the spouse of a NASA flight controller, let me assure you that the rich escaping the Earth for a space utopia is only a trope in fiction, at least in our lifetimes. The most comfortable living situation we've ever devised above Earth's orbit is on the International Space Station. The ISS is an incredible feat of engineering, one that the combined space agencies of the US, Russia, Europe, Japan, and Canada have been working on for 23 years now. But life on the ISS is anything but luxurious." Anyway, that's Sim Kern, just a couple weeks ago in Salon, "No Billionaires Won't Escape to Space While the World Burns." Worth checking out the, you know, that argumentation. Just sort of, you know, no, they want to make more money with this space tourism junk. That's what they want to do. Well, okay, we got a couple calls, looks like Sonia's on the other one right now, so we'll wait to hear from our first caller, unless you're already there. David, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. And, you know, I'm hearing you talk about the privatization of these guys going up to space. And I actually don't agree with you. I think it's way better. My tax dollars are going to those goons flying drones on Mars. You know, I mean, I'd rather have these guys do it. They'll make the private, the NASA have to stand up and be more efficient and maybe stop doing this shenanigans, because I agree with you. You know, there's a saying way back when we went in the moonshot, how can we explore the heavens when we have a hell on Earth, right? I mean, where are we gone from that moonshot in 69? We got absolutely nothing out of that. I mean, of course, all the space pundits say we got all this great stuff. I mean, but this whole notion that I'm paying to go to Mars for these guys to fly drones, there's way more money spent on by our government, NASA, than these private entrepreneurs. I'd rather see them do their thing. Yeah, they got their money, let them do it, but at least my money isn't going to this silly stuff of...
Well, of course, it's all our money. The idea that these billionaires, that they've, you know, earned money, it's somehow theirs. I think that's not a helpful way to look at it. They've basically expropriated, I guess is the old term, the wealth by not paying their workers very much and cutting corners on health benefits and, you know, monopolizing an industry that, you know, the U.S., you know, we could expand the U.S. Postal Service to do the kind of things that Amazon does. We don't need a whole other, that, you know, that's my take. I think that's erroneous. And I also think that the space tourism is just is obscene. It's just a bad thing to be embarking on at this particular moment in time.
Well, it's been a bad thing for us to be doing this silly space stuff.
I agree. I was against the space program, you know, 50, you know, that was one of the first things I sort of became conscious of politically was the obscenity of that, for sure. And, you know, right. The NASA budget has, I think, gone down since the heyday of the you know, Saturn V or whatever, space rockets and the moon flights. That was just such a huge share of our, and that, you know, that was the Cold War time. So obviously we're, you know, this is, it's part of a whole geopolitical shift as well. The the changes in NASA. But I understand your point. I just think it's, I think there is other ways to combat, you know, the contradictions within the federal budget. You know, let's talk about the military. Let's talk about military bases. Let's talk about vast, bloated, pork in the military spending. Let's talk about the weapons programs that are duplicated, that are, that are outdated. That anyway, there's so many things to talk about in the federal budget, and certainly NASA is one of them. But I'm not sure the best way to get at it is to argue that private billionaires competing with them will make them do a better job.
Well, I think they're going to have to wake up and say, oh, you don't have to be this special $20 million trained guy to go up to space, because how much money do they spend on training these astronauts? And so I really think that, it's like we could have...
I don't think we should be going up into space at all. Anyway, we could go around and around on that. Thank you for registering your comments. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. We got another caller. Who's our other caller? Oh, we don't have another caller. Well, sorry. I think that was David. I could have kept you on for a little longer. Anyway, 503-231-8187. I guess I was a little short with you. I just think we're in such urgent times that we need to really regear our thinking. I mean, I'll challenge people once again. I know I get a lot of people calling saying, oh, we need to, if each one of us planted more trees, if each one of us, raised an organic garden, if each one of us, I hope we can start to, at least move away from the idea that, individual voluntarism is going to get us out of this crisis. No, collective struggle and collective action. I would be interested if people, some of the climate change organizations, whether they be 350, whether they be, some of the bigger, older environmental groups that are working on climate, whatever they might be, I wonder if they're talking about this microgrid thing in a pragmatic, practical way, fighting to change the local, state, and federal codes. And maybe encouraging, be interested in encouraging civil disobedience. Maybe people actually disconnecting from the grid. I'm not advocating that myself. I'm just interested if people are talking about that, or doing it collectively. I know we have another pro-space travel argumentation here, and we're running out of time. Well, I'll entertain you very briefly, Tim, but maybe as a talk show host, I should be have more patience, but we'll see what you have to say. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, I'm pro-space because I just think it's an important aspect of humanity's growth. And not only that, But
do we have any room to grow yet? Do you see what's happening? The jet stream has broken. We are having unprecedented climatic events all over the globe. We are having huge floods. We are having massive wildfires, massive droughts.
No. Well, I believe there's more than enough money to deal with that, but there's not the political will, at least not yet.
Well, I'm saying the political will is eroded by the spectacle of these billionaires in space that... people under the spell that technology will save us and that you too can someday get into space.
I don't think that's what has spurred.
Really?
I think it's greed. It's greed on the part of those who are the most prolific polluters. They just want to make money. They're not thinking, maybe the rich are thinking of space, but the vast majority of us aren't thinking of escaping to space.
No, I'm talking about the society of the spectacle, that we're all under the illusion of that we all can, someday maybe I can become a millionaire. And also the illusion of, these grand, the Olympics must go on, even though we're having an insane pandemic. We must have our huge sporting events because we must be distracted. We have to keep the spectacle going. We have to keep it's a huge spectacle. Did you see how Anderson Cooper was?
But people need to be distracted sometimes. when the pain is so great, when the danger is so great.
No. The spectacle creates the danger and then distracts people from it. That's what's happening.
You mean the illusion of that you can...
The entire industrial civilization spectacle that has been created. It's a huge spectacle that we're barely aware of it. Anyway, I'll give you one last comment, and then we got Thomas.
Okay. As far as the billionaires are going, I think what they're doing is taking up the slack where the governments aren't doing it, and they're breaking the ice. So once the ice is broken and it becomes easy to do, cost is going to go down, and it will be possible.
No, we're talking about the cost of rockets creating more climate change. Did you hear that first?
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, right.
But there must be ways to...
There must be. That's what people always say. There must be ways. Carbon. Technology will save us. No way. We are beyond all that. I'm sorry. I'm getting on a high horse these days because the earth is burning up, man. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
I totally agree with you.
And we're not going to solve it this way. Well, okay, we've got to let you go.
How are we going to solve it, man?
What's that? How are we going to solve it? I told you. By totally re-gearing our entire productive apparatus, the entire way we live, the way that corporations have all this control, that all our resources are wrapped up in these huge financial institutions, huge corporations, centralized and national governments. We need to split it up, split up the grid, produce power locally, gain back control over our daily lives. Okay, let's go to Thomas. You're on deck. Hey, Thomas.
Yeah, hi. Listen, I got a couple of things. One, I wanted to just bring up this. There's a great song by Gil Scott-Heron called Whitey's on the Moon.
Yeah, that was just on, she played it on Democracy Now! Halfway point.
No kidding. Yeah. Wow, that's fantastic, because I remember hearing that song many, many years ago, and I think I actually saw him perform that live, you know, in Detroit. But it's a great song, very sarcastic about the moon program, and very, very, probing into the nonsense of all of that sort of thing. And the other thing I wanted to bring up, you were talking a lot about microgrids. I'm not against microgrids. I've got some solar panels on my shed, and I charge up an electric bicycle with it, and I'm all for that. But I remember a long time ago in the 60s, Buckminster Fuller was talking about power grids and things like this. And one of his concepts was to while we're repairing the infrastructure, to tie our infrastructure, just like they do around our country, for efficient use of the electricity, to tie it into a worldwide grid. And then as the earth turns and the sun is shining always someplace on half of the earth, all of that power could then be distributed and used, and the effect of lack of wind or lack of sun in one place or another
would
be minimized.
We got problems with too vast a scale already. I think that's...
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that might just amplify problems. I don't know. I haven't thought about that, but that's interesting idea. Good old Buckminster Fuller. I tend not have been a big fan of his because of the techno-utopianism, which I think is part of the deep underlying sort of limitation on our thinking. The idea that we're so steeped in being mediated by technologies that we think that just another technology, when really it's really the added layers of technological innovations that have got us into this mess. Anyway, I'll let you
listen,
go. Go ahead.
One last thing. Yeah, I'm with you there, because I'm more of a fatalist. I don't think we're going to solve this without having to go through a tremendous disaster on this planet, you know. But to me, any of these are ideas. All this other stuff, micro or water or anything, it still involves technology. So I think it's just good to consider, throw these ideas out, and then just try to pick and choose from which the best ones.
Well, they're technology, but they're a different... It's a different set of social relations as part of it, and different set of economic relations, and it's also you know, the amount of energy wasted on long distance transmission lines is not inconsiderable. Plus, look at the forest fires that are sparked by these transmission lines going through forests. look at the vulnerability of transmission lines to various weather events. It's just, we need to scale down. I'm talking about powering down, scaling down on a local, regional, national, and international level. This is, you know, what people have been talking about since forever, especially since the 60s and 70s.
James Howard Kunstler has got a great series of books called World Made by Hand, and that's exactly the world that he describes.
Great. Well, thank you for that, James Howard Kunstler. He's a good one. And I'm talking about specifically in our area, what can we do both in challenging the capitalist financial sector, which is leading us down the road to hell, burning in hell, to challenge them to resist and to live concrete alternatives. So microgrid is, it's individual houses, but it's also like parking lot garages, building tops, places where there's really no major, well, there could be bird impact, there could be others, there's always going to be issues. But in an emergency situation, how do you more quickly transition and get away from the larger impacts? And as I've been talking to friends, my old friend Patrick Mazza was saying he's more into a mix of centralized, larger ones. But the thing is, if you have more local production, you can minimize the need for the larger centralized ones and maybe site them in less damaging places. Oh, it looks like we still have some callers. Who's our next caller up? Go ahead, Edie, you're on the air.
So thank you. And I so agree with you, and I'm so grateful for the moral clarity and the importance and urgency with which you tell us we cannot wait. We must act, and it can make a profound difference. I wanted to add to your argument some facts that I hope will persuade some people. My ex-husband was an engineer for NASA. He was actually he created part of developing the solid rocket fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And he was then so disillusioned by so much of the corruption and the bad science and the politics and the greed that was going on with NASA. But he was really upset because he had this ideal about what is good science and they were not using it. So he testified many times towards Congress, he says. I haven't checked it to confirm. And and he was saying that the propaganda that, beside Kane, the space program brought us all these wonderful things like Teflon and things we need. Well, Teflon is carcinogenic, and it was developed before the space program. And all the technologies they say we got because of the space program were actually existing prior the U.S. space program, prior Sputnik. And they were actually, way behind in what they were using. Every time someone goes into sends a rocket with or without a person, it burns up important things you need to have. It destroys, it makes holes in our ozone, which affects all living creatures and the climate. It uses an incredible amount of energy. And all those people who are a part of this happening could always say, we quit. Or there could be a change, as there was with the Soviets who suddenly were in space and had no one on the ground supporting them or protecting them. And no one, no matter how wealthy they are, can escape climate change or have a sustainable life off the planet, because you can never make the slaves on the earth keep paying for you and providing you the resources and the expertise. So it's a fantasy of a delusion of continuing oppression. But when we get back to the wisdom that has been expressed and experienced by so many different people who are staying grounded in their own lands, indigenous to the early Europeans or Asians or anyone, it is living in harmony, not having us versus them, not male versus female, and and not having these big major, as you said, monopolies on power. My father, for over 40 years, worked for Pacific Power and Light, and the big long distance transmission lines used up more power than they transferred. They're more dangerous, more costly. And in Portland, where we have the Sylvan Crest, they had people raising cattle who were opposed to this because of the power lines doing harm to their cattle. So Pacific Power and Light would just keep buying cattle and have them grazing, and the people going by thought, oh, isn't that so sweet, not realizing
that
the cattle had to be changed out because they had all these tumors.
Edie, you brought up a lot of...
We can have...
You brought up a lot of great points, but we only have a couple minutes left. I think we had one more caller I might like to...
We can have the small, micro, caring for each other and wasting less. And the priority must be our trees and our...
Okay, well, I got to let you go, Edie. Thank you. Appreciate it, as always. And who's up our last caller? Mark, go ahead. You're our last caller.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Our priority must be a harmonious society, system transformation. Why can't we see the good? Why can't we see that there are positive developments in China, for example, eliminating the poverty, extreme poverty of 700 million people? I think the space spectacle is obscene and wasteful, that the emergencies now are housing and taxation and banking. Now, this requires a restructuring so housing can be cooperative and nonprofit, at least in part. You know, the state has to buy up land and prevent speculation. Now, let me know when they take this seriously. You know, tents and the houseless people are all over Portland. So it's absolutely imperative. You know,
I'm way into the ending speculation. Rental speculation is one of the biggest drivers of the housing crisis. And,
yeah.
These things, I know you sound like of an age to know that, you know, the idea of revolutionary transformation seems to be kind of an artifact of the past. Maybe in some places not so much, but in the United States, you know, it gets people are just really confused politically about what actually is the nature of the economic and political system we live in, and how what actually drives it, which is, you know, financialized capitalism,
yes,
run by the big hedge funds and equity firms and banks, et cetera. So how do we do that on a local level? I don't know. Good question.
Well, in truth, cooperation depends on competition. We need both, and we need to find ways of public ownership, public ownership, communal property. We need to learn from the welcoming refugee center in Vancouver, Canada, that was opened in 2014. It has 160 beds. Well, this is how you include people, right? This is how you create a harmonious society.
I look forward to concrete examples coming up of people making things happen. I know it usually is a terms of the housing, unfortunately, it's in Portland is such a crisis now that, you know, we're just trying to get land. The city's just trying to get land open up for a few new centers, a few new like tiny home villages, the kind of things you're talking about, or I was talking about. We were talking about is what drives this. You know, those are things that require large scale collective consciousness and action and. And we got to start doing it, and we got to use the whole idea of including transition to renewables and other ways of building and stuff as part of the infrastructure is a key thing. So I think whatever happens on a local state level needs to develop that model. We are out of time.
We
are totally out of time. So I got to let you go. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for everybody who called in. Thanks to Sonia for operating the board. This is Paul Rowland, Wednesday Talk Radio. Ta-ta.
Leave heaven alone. Leave heaven alone. Let it go the way it's supposed to go. Without laser beams and invisible shields and satellites in the sky. Satellites in the sky. We swept the top from the soil. We've drilled a million holes.
Open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting